From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to the Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
Brian and Vinny, along with Granny and Craig and sometimes other people. They're paid by a con, and they'll say,
everybody, it's the Brian and Vinny Show. It is January 11, 2026. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for a wacky evening. Well, SmackDown and Collision. Which, there was definitely something wacky on Collision. My favorite televised moment of the entire year. But we are going to start with SmackDown. I find starting with AW on Wednesday, because Dynamite's usually a pretty newsworthy show.
Yeah.
Far more newsworthy than NXT. Actually, not always. But it's a much better show.
Yes.
Whereas on Saturday, I'm afraid that SmackDown is multitudes more newsworthy than Collision.
The gulf between the two and the newsworthiness factor.
Yes.
Hard to measure.
It is difficult to measure. So yes, we're going to start with SmackDown, and then we'll go to Collision here in a moment. Should mention, this is our weekly free show here on the site, so if you listen to the show and you love it, well, however you're listening to this for free, you can sign up today, and we do 84 podcasts every single month. You get all the Observer Lives, Brian and Vinny shows, Wrestling Observer radios. We got like a half dozen podcasts on the site. There's, somebody did the count, 17,000 shows in the archives. Every show dating back to 2005. You get the Observer and the board if you sign up on the main site, WrestlingObserver.com. And if you sign up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Why is Craig breathing so heavy? If you sign up on any of those, $9.99 a month. And the Spotify and YouTube, obviously YouTube, but Spotify as well, you can get audio and video. Apple Podcasts is just the audio podcast. But Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, all $9.99. And if you want the full archive and the Observers and the Observer archives and the board and everything else, that is WrestlingObserver.com, the main site, for $14.99. So grab your subscription today. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up, including Tuesday. We'll have a state of the TNA Impact Reviews address Tuesday. Because a lot of people are sick of it. And the listeners as well. So, that's going to be Tuesday on the show.
Well played.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get going with SmackDown here.
We watched WWE SmackDown January 9th, 2026, taped from the Uber Arena in Berlin, Germany. Randy Orton comes out for a promo, but Trick Williams immediately interrupts. He is way, way over here in Berlin. He's respectful to Randy, but notes all your stuff is in the past. I'm the future. I'm the big star now. They go back and forth for a while. Randy warns him, never turn your back on me again. So Trick slaps the mic out of his hand. They have a little brawl. It's just a little skirmish to open the show. And it's a guy he's never worked with before. So you know Randy doesn't want to fuck anything up. But he was going so slow for the two or three things they did here. Trick flees. Miz then attacks Randy from behind.
Excuse me, the Miz?
Okay, I don't watch the show every single week. Were you as confused as I was?
Well, it's one of those things where you can say it makes sense because of what they did later, if you want to do it that way. But, like, why is The Miz attacking?
I had no idea.
Randy Orton here.
Yeah.
I think Randy Orton might have given an RKO last week, but Doesn't he do that to everybody? I have a far bigger issue with what's going on with The Miz later, but... Right.
So Miz eats an RKO here, and then Randy turns to Trick on the floor and shouts, "I think I like you," and gives him a wink.
Well, it was notable they didn't give Trick the RKO. Mm-hmm. They are trying to protect Trick. Last week, he made it clear he wants the world title. This week, he's in the ring with Randy Orton, and they didn't have Trick take an RKO. And they've announced a tournament to determine a number one contender, and Trick is involved. So he's not showing up to be a mid-carder, thank God. And I thought this segment was overall pretty good. This Trick is he's a good talker.
I think it's funny when the wrestlers claim to be 6'3", and then the other one claims to be 6'3", and they show us side-by-side, and Randy's a good 2 inches taller.
It's actually 6'5", they both claim.
Oh, I apologize. Yes, you are correct. Well, apparently Randy's about 6'7".
Are you sick?
Yes, I just told you.
Oh, well, we had you muted because you were breathing, so...
I will try not to.
You can breathe, but like I was doing a plug, and it sounded like a plug for the Spice Channel. It was... Do you know that thing still exists?
No,
that's a callback.
That's impossible.
No.
Of all people to make the deep porn cut, I was not thinking
apparently
you.
Apparently, it's only... I think it's a Spice Channel. Tom mentioned it.
Now he, I would think.
Yeah, he was on Observer Live, and he mentioned it, and I was like, there's no way that still exists. And he was like making a joke, but then he looked it up, and apparently like... I can't remember where, like Denmark or something. South Korea. South Korea, there's still a Spice network.
Huh.
Yeah, can you believe it?
I wonder if that one's not the same one we had, if it's literally about spice.
Yeah, it's about
possible.
Yeah, about curry.
Could be a cooking channel.
Yeah, sure.
Or maybe both.
Hey, whatever you're into. So it's Trick Williams versus...
I think most people are into both of those things.
Not simultaneously, but hey, I'm not judging. Trick Williams versus Rey Fénix. Let's just move on.
Attaboy.
So they had a very fun match. I was actually shocked at how great their chemistry was, because it's not like Trick's done a lot of lucha, but they mostly blended well. There was, especially in the second half, a couple of things where their timing was off, or one part where Fénix tried to spin kick off the ropes, and it looked like neither guy knew if it was supposed to hit or not, but he just landed on his feet and threw a chop. They just moved on. But there was a point in the first half where Trick... went for his spinning kick. And Tessitore says, "There's that Trick kick! That's so devastating!" And I watched this guy's entire NXT run, his entire TNA championship reign. I don't remember him ever using the Trick kick once in his life.
I don't think so. I think that was Trish Stratus with the Chick kick.
Yeah, I'm hoping this is...
He confused Trish and Trick.
I'm hoping that was a mistake on his part, because there was no reason to change it from the Trick knee. Why change anything? It's all working, but... they did a few counters at the end. Trick got a cradle, hooked the ties to win.
Well, actually, if we're being fair, it's no longer the Trick knee either. It's
Trick
the
shot.
Trick shot. Yeah. I thought Trick knee was better, but apparently that's an injury, and a Trick shot is, like, cool. Mm. So, whatever. I thought this match was pretty good.
Trick gets a cradle and hooks the ties to win.
My only problem with it is, it was a good match, but... this was Trick's first match on SmackDown, and I think they put him with Fénix because the idea was, we want this guy to have a really great debut and win. But it was like, you know, when we hear about, oh, you know, they saw Obafemi and Javon Evans on Saturday night's main event, and they were like, oh my God, we got to get him up now. And it's like, you don't watch TV, you don't watch NXT television, you run this company, you don't watch NXT television. Whose idea was it to book Trick Williams with a luchador? Like, it was fine, but really what I got out of this match was... the match was fine, but the man that stood out was Fénix.
Yeah.
And what you want is for Trick to stand out. And this was not a match where Trick was going to stand out. You know, at best, he was going to, you know, do a good job in the match, but Fénix was the guy that looked great in this match, and then ended up getting pinned, and it was more a showcase for Fénix and Trick, but it was fine.
Fénix did a springboard at one point, jumped up to the top rope, looked like he was going to eat it. He then vaults over to the second rope on the other side and then springs to the top rope on that side and delivers a drop kick. This guy, as amazing as he is, he always makes his opponent look great, too. He's awesome.
Yeah, I wish you stopped stealing my stuff. Pause for laughter. Byron Saxton.
Stealing what stuff? That Fénix is great?
No, my stuff. Fénix is stealing my stuff.
I see.
Because I did the same springboard stuff.
It's a joke.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You also made your opponents look great.
By contrast, you never thought about it. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Byron Saxton interviews the now the weirdest couple I've ever seen in a wrestling. So Julia and Kiana James.
They've been together for months.
I know, but I'm watching them do this promo. And Julia, her English is not very good. So there's at least one third of this I can't understand what she's saying at all. But her energy and her passion and her emotion are totally legitimate and believable. Then they go to Kiana. It's the total opposite. And her diction and enunciation is precise, but it's also mechanical and soulless and phony. They're total opposites. Weird.
You know, there's a thing in WWE where you got to be careful because if you hurt people, you're going to get a bad rep and then they won't do anything with you. But this show and the Julia match last week and this week kind of felt like after being on the main roster for quite a while and she was champion for a bit, but it was like she decided her New Year's resolution was, fuck this shit, I'm going back to the old Julia. Because, man, she, the last 2 weeks, was kind of like Ilya Dragunov, where he's not going to hurt you, but goddammit, you better be ready to give 110%. Because if you don't, he is going to run you over. And Julia was not messing around last week when she had the match to win the title, and she was not messing around in that match with Alexa Bliss. It was something to see.
A video package for the Damian Priest Aleister Black ambulance match from last week. And they watch this whole show, this whole thing, and they show Priest winning. And they cut to Byron Saxton standing next to Damian Priest. Clearly, he's been watching this on the monitor. And he says, wow, Damian. Profound words from Byron Saxton. Damian says, I'm done with Aleister Black. I want the WWE title. He calls out Cody Rhodes. Drew McIntyre interrupts. Notes he could win this title too. Notes the last time Damian and Drew were in the ring together, Drew's brains got scrambled, is what Damian said. But he leaves, and so Drew cuts a promo on Cody. He was so pissed. I said the picture of him and his dad on fire. Now I have this. I have the watch Dusty Pond to pay for Cody's future. He'll be so angry. He will get disqualified in that very first fall. Then I only need one more fall to win.
Should note that, yes, in their final match, he did scramble Drew's brains. But if you remember the actual feud, the feud was Drew scrambling Damian Priest's brains for like 8 weeks in a row.
Alexa's on the phone with Charlotte, who is apparently sick like Craig. Nia and Lash interrupt. They try to drive a wedge between Charlotte and Alexa. Alexa warns Lash to ditch Nia before she drags you down. And we get Alexa Bliss versus Julia. Like 2 minutes of this was on TV. Alexa goes for Sister Abigail. Kiana distracts. So Alexa hits a DDT instead and slaps Kiana into the ring. It's not much of a distraction, really. But she goes up top and Lash shoves her down, and Julia wins with a Northern Lights bomb.
Let's not gloss over any of this as you just did. First off, there was an interference spot. And then they go to commercial. And when they come back, they note that Julia has now interfered 3 times by the time they come back from the first commercial break. So they go back and forth for a while. And then we have Kiana distracting again. And then Lash shoving her off the top. So in one match.
A short one.
In one match, we had interference 5 times. I am so fucking sick of this. If you want to do interference to get the heat and interference at the finish, fine. Whatever. It's been like that for like 100 years. But in what universe are we having 5 separate examples of interference in a single match? It makes the babyface look stupid. It makes the referee look incredibly stupid. It makes me feel stupid that someone interfered 5 times, or 2 people interfered a total of 5 times, and nobody did anything about it. The match itself, I mean, Julia beat her ass, and Alexa, I guess, got her ass beat and decided, I'm going to beat your ass. And so, like, from a women's wrestling standpoint in WWE, it was much more hard-hitting than usual, but the booking was just appalling. I could not handle 5 in one fucking match.
And afterwards, Nia Jax hit Alexa with the softest, most gentle, delicate annihilator you ever
saw. Hold on. So they're double-teaming Alexa, and Lash drags her to the corner, and Nia climbs up top. And Nia is, she's hit and miss with this annihilator. Sometimes she will just crush you to death, and other times she barely touches the opponent, probably depending on how she's feeling or what she thinks of the other person. So she does the annihilator on Alexa, and it's just the safest, lightest annihilator ever. But as soon as she hits it, she stands up, and then for reasons I cannot explain, she sits down a second time. Alexa was not expecting the second one. And if you watch this, she hits the first one, you know, Alexa, ah, and then she closes her eyes like she's dead. And then she gets sat on a second time that she's not expecting. And she just goes, ah! It was the most, like, I laughed. I hope she's okay. I'm sure she is because they did stuff afterwards, but I laughed so hard, and I watched it again and again, and I was like, why did Nia do that?
She probably realized it sucked.
Why did you do that? God, you just fucking squashed the shit out of her. Oh, my God. What a rib.
We're like a decade into Nia Jax's career, and why did she do that? It's still something we ask frequently.
I almost want to fucking find it and play it here on the air, but I don't want YouTube to take us down. You got to go back and watch it, though. It's like, she sits on her, stands up. And then, goddamn, I'll sit on her again, right on her stomach. Not like her chest, just right on her stomach where all her air is. And it's just, God.
Nick Aldis officially welcomes Jordynne Grace to SmackDown. Chelsea Green interrupts, demands her U.S. title rematch. They all jibber-jabber a while. Aldis signs Jordynne versus Alba Fire for later. Kit Wilson and his blouse and his lace collar show up.
See, here's the thing. Like, I've been burying this gimmick because the gimmick sucks. His toxic masculinity gimmick. And all he does is go out there and get beat. And it's just like something that came out of nowhere. He's never been about toxic masculinity before. His partner disappears, and all of a sudden he's got some wacky new gimmick out of nowhere. But I felt really bad because his partners just had neck surgery. And for those of you that don't remember, they had a tag match, and it was with Fraxium. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure the spot, and this is actually another one, you know, when we talk about injuries, it's like sometimes an injury is something really scary and dangerous, but I'm pretty sure what destroyed his neck was like just a reverse DDT. Like Nathan Frazier grabbed him like a scorpion death drop and just dropped to his stomach, and like that was it. And if you watch it, what I think happened was he had his arm all the way around, so like his forearm was right on the back of Elton's neck, and he didn't get his arm out of the way when he dropped him, and basically Elton's neck just like dropped right onto this guy's forearm, and I presume that's what destroyed his neck. And then this poor guy, like his hands, he can't move his hands or whatever, and then Nathan Frazier goes right up top and hits the Phoenix Splash and lands right on his face, so his face was also destroyed. And that was the last we saw of poor Elton Prince. So hopefully he makes a full recovery and can come back, because he was a really good worker and seems like a super nice guy, and they were a good team. And now Kit Wilson's got this gimmick. So,
well, it's not that different from what they were doing before. It's not as subtle. He's actually preaching toxic masculinity over and over again.
Yes.
But they were always effeminate at the... at the least. Anyway, he's bitching about Matt Cardona, and that was his only appearance on the show, and that made me sad because I did see his entrance last week, and that is a phenomenal video and song he has now, and they should just play that on a loop all the time. Saxton then interviews Cardona, who talks about ditching Zack Ryder and reinventing himself, interrupts his own promo to go say hi to Cody Rhodes. A strong mixed reaction here in Europe, with Cody defending against a Scottish star. Cardona says he wants a title shot at some point. Cody says, let me finish with Drew, then we can talk. We have a Three Stages of Hell video package. Last winner of a Three Stages of Hell match in WWE was John Cena in 2013 over The Ryback.
The Ryback. Mm-hmm. I got to talk about this Wyatt Six match with the MFTs.
Well, that's what we're here for.
I think they have figured out the secret to the Wyatt Six.
Okay.
8-man tags. Because this was the second 8-man tag involving the Wyatt Six in a row. that I had no faith in going in, and it ended up miles better than I expected. When they announced the Wyatt Six versus the Psycho Circus on that AAA show, I was freaking salivating. Like, it's just drool. Like, oh my God, this will be... Like, I was excited, but not like it would be good. I was like, this is going to be the worst match of the year. Right in time for the Observer Awards. Like, and they had a fucking amazing match. It was like my favorite. Maybe not the best. It was my favorite match on that show.
Sure.
And then they announced the Wyatt Six and the MFTs. And it's like, it should be all right, you know? Like, the MFTs, you've got, like, you know, Tama Tonga's pretty good, and Howdy's all Howdy or whatever, but JC Mateo's, you know, he can be great.
Yeah, he sure is.
And so they put this match together, and holy shit. Like,
dude, JC Mateo's not in it.
Well, he wasn't in, but he got involved.
I guess.
Because there's 8,000 people in every match.
Yeah.
But the point of this is, they did this 8-man tag, and I don't know if it's just like boom, 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 or what it is, but it's like, it was so much better than I expected. And when they finally put, it was amazing. They thought that the big spot is going to be when we put Solo and Howdy in the ring together. The fans are going to go wild. Well, they were wrong. It was actually when they put the fucking Vintner and Tala Tonga in the ring together.
Kaiju battle.
Oh, my God.
It's cool when giants fight.
These guys tagged in, and this fucking crowd was, like, living and dying with this fucking battle. And it was good.
What's...
Like, the Vintner is a great babyface when he's just making a big comeback and beating people's ass. And then they, you know, they tagged in Howdy and Solo, and it was all right. But it was nothing like the Vintner and Tala Tonga.
Which is amazing, because when the Vintner first got his hot tag, as I mentioned, it's cool when giants fight, but he gets in there, he's trying not to be a giant. And he's doing spin kicks that are very slow, and drop kicks and high crosses where he barely leaves the ground. None of this looks good. And then they do the kaiju battle. It's way better! Just be a giant, Mr. Vintner. You're really good at that.
This match was going along so great, and then there's a spot at the end where a Howdy hits a Uranage. He's taking all the MFTs. Puts the mandible claw on JC Mateo. And then Solo goes outside and he picks up a lantern.
Mm-hmm.
A fucking lantern. And the announcers say it is the spiritual beacon of the Wyatt Six.
A guiding light and spiritual beacon.
I was like, is it fucking 1992 and this goddamn Undertaker's urn?
Yep, it's the urn. And the lantern is the new urn.
God damn it. Fucking Howdy is distracted. And then Tama hits the hidden blade. I mean, fuck, dude. This was going along so good. You can't beat one of these fuckers. You've got to do a finish involving a fucking spiritual beacon of a lantern. God! I was disappointed.
The funny thing is, Solo picks up the lantern. You know, the light is, you know, supposedly, you know, Bray Wyatt's spirit and all this, and Uncle Howdy blows it out before they get in the ring. Solo accidentally found the on button, and at one point the lantern turns on, and he quickly clicks it off. I popped.
Yeah. The other, yeah, Tama Tonga pinned Uncle Howdy.
Yes.
There's... Again, 14 minutes.
Well, Tama Tonga has been teasing. He's probably going to be next for like the United States title.
All right.
Like, he keeps showing up backstage and challenging. But it's like an open challenge every week, and he never accepts.
I see.
He just stares down the champion.
I've seen that. I just think it's weird that the four guys on the Wyatt Six team, it was the supposed leader who did the job here. But
well, we can't possibly pin
Joe Gacy.
Joe Gacy.
The other complaint here that I have, and it's
better not pin the fucking Vintner.
Has nothing to do with any of the 8 to 12 people involved in actually wrestling the match. There was so much zooming and shaky camera going on here. And I've seen this. It's not the first time. I noticed it's something else I watched like a week ago. I hope they have not brought back Kevin Dunn. It feels like they're starting to think about bringing back Kevin Dunn, or at least the techniques he used. Stop it! Just zoom out and let me watch!
I mean, it was the MFTs and the Light Six.
It
might have
help.
Been necessary in this one. That was the thing with Kevin Dunn. Like, the idea of zooming and shaking is, well, you don't want to see, you know, someone throws a punch and they miss by 6 inches. Okay, well, like, you realize you have all of these great workers now in WWE. You don't need to do that shit. But, like, if you do have two guys that suck, if you need to cover something up, all right, whatever. But, I mean, in 95% of WWE matches, I don't think you need to worry about covering up for, like, missed punches.
Remember when two guys do a hockey fight and they do a camera cut for every punch?
Oh, my God.
You're like watching a strobe light. Carmelo Hayes dares The Miz to accept his open challenge for the night. Miz says, "I can't. Randy Orton has hurt my neck." So Carmelo says, "Look over there. It's Randy Orton." And Miz whips his head around. So he's faking his neck injury as an excuse to not fight.
Hey, listen, I thought they did a good job with this. I thought Miz did a good job. I thought Carmelo did a good job. I thought this was fine.
I don't quite get why Miz doesn't want a U.S. title shot. You think he'd be eager to get his title back and fight this guy he hates? But okay, whatever.
Well, I think the thing is, he thinks he's going to lose to Carmelo. That's why he doesn't want it.
I see. All right. So then Melo spots Ilya Dragunov, who is in his suit.
Yeah, he goes, "I'm going out right now. You going?" Ilya's in his fucking suit.
Looks down, yes. It's a nice suit, too. It's like a vest and a tie and the whole thing. He says, "Another time we will fight. Right now, I'm going to go talk to Nick about something different." And he walks into Aldis's office, and Melo is relieved. He respects Ilya and thinks he deserves a title shot, but didn't actually want to fight him because he's very, very scary.
Smart man.
Yeah. Alba Fire versus Jordan Grace. Jordan did not get much of a reaction coming out. They need to bring back her TNA music. It's way better. Went a couple of minutes. It was mostly her beating ass. Chelsea gets in the apron, so Jordan throws Alba into her, finishes her with a torture rack bomb. And they did the right thing.
No more Made in Japan. No. That one ain't making the main roster.
No.
How do you feel about her new blonde hair?
Well, it's always blonde.
Like, it's super blonde, though.
That's fine.
I don't know. I think she stood out as a brunette.
I think she still stands out pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I don't. There's not. Understood.
No.
That's fair.
Yeah. But as she's leaving, another person who stands out interrupts her. It's Jade Cargill, who takes her in, eyeballs her up and down, and walks a circle around her and warns her, "Now you're on my show, and I'm that bitch." Byron Saxton interviews Sami Zayn. He says, "Part of him wants Drew to win that main event tonight because I've never beaten him. Beating him for that WWE title sounds great. But Cody is my friend and a great champion. Who do I think is going to win? My money is on Cody. But whoever wins, I'm waiting on the other side."
I don't know if they're going to do it because it just seems too obvious. But, you know, they have done this Sami Zayn, Drew McIntyre thing where they are always noting Sami has never beaten Drew. And I remember the first time they said it, I was like, that's impossible. Because you think about all the house shows and how long they've been in the company. Then turns out, Sammy has never beaten Drew. And then, spoiler alert, Drew ends up winning the title. And Sammy here, he's never won the title, but they're teasing a title run for Sami Zayn. And I could see Sammy being the guy that beats Drew McIntyre. And he wins the title and gets his first win over Drew McIntyre. I can very much see them doing that. Then he can take that belt home to his kid and be a proud father.
Axiom confronts Nathan Fraser, who's very confused, and it turns out it's Johnny Gargano in disguise.
I thought that was well done as well.
It was, but I guess they just wanted to make sure Nathan did not accept the open challenge. Yeah, because it's Gargano and Candice, and they beat him up a little bit, and the real Axiom chases them away, and that was it.
It was weird because the fake Axiom, like, at first, I just thought it was Axiom. But then, once, you know, he attacks the guy, I was like, he did look kind of different. And so I rewound it, and Johnny Gargano is not a big guy at all.
No.
Okay? But he looked way more jacked than Axiom under that outfit. Yes. I don't know what it was. And then the other Axiom shows up. And what's funny is he had a new mask, a new outfit, a new cape. Like, this new look for Axiom. Like, Axiom, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but, like, you know, he's a good-looking guy. And when he came to WWE, this was, you know, during the Vince era. And I guess they just figured, you know, he's too small. We have to make him a luchador and give him a mask or whatever. But it's always been like kind of a generic mask. Like, he never used this mask on the indies. It was just something given in WWE. And I was always like, why does he wear a mask? Like, he's just a guy in a mask. Well, this outfit they gave him on this show, I was like, this guy looks like a freaking superhero. It's the best Axiom look he's ever had. And then I don't even know why he was there in the outfit because he didn't do anything on the show.
So Carmelo Hayes does his U.S. title open challenge. Out comes Shinsuke Nakamura.
God damn, this was another one.
This was a great match.
So Shinsuke Nakamura also wants to win a world title before he retires, okay? And he hasn't been around for a long time. And they had that whole situation. Is he going to be at the Tokyo Dome? Is he going to be part of the ceremony? Before that, it was even, could he be Tanahashi's opponent? And he was none of these things. Didn't even go to the Dome. And, of course, last week, you know, right when it's time to get on a flight to go to the Dome, well, they have to book him to SmackDown to do a five-second backstage interview. I'm like, yeah, that's great timing right there. So he came out this week for this match with Carmelo, and man, I don't know what happened. Maybe he's just decided it's now or never. This was the best Nakamura has looked in years.
100%.
This guy was working his ass off, and he looked great in this match. I mean, it was like he watched that Tanahashi-Okada match and was like, I could still do this shit. And I thought he was fantastic in this match.
Yep.
He lost. But goddamn, this was the best Nakamura in years.
So they had plenty of time and went through two commercial breaks. Nakamura in the middle portion is just dragging, screwing him left and right, and grounds him with a bunch of submission holds, attacking the leg. It does a calf crab, it does a knee bar. And Melo was making these comebacks, but still limping all over the place. And finally, Nakamura gets hits a flying knee with Melo draped across the ropes. It's a Kinshasa off the middle rope. But he tries his normal Kinshasa. He runs into a code breaker, and Melo follows with nothing but net and gets the win. All you could ask for from a TV wrestling match.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Super awesome. The dragon screw leg whip from the top rope. Well, actually, Melo had got his foot caught on the top rope, and he did it from the top rope. He did it from the second rope. Yeah, he had his working shoes on tonight. It's good to see. Good to see an older, more motivated Nakamura.
Everyone remembers the Intercontinental title in like the early 90s, and it was a working man's title and all this and that. But like back then, you weren't seeing Intercontinental title matches with Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels every week on television. You would see him every 4 months or 3 months at a pay-per-view, or there'd occasionally be... Like this U.S. title run on SmackDown over the last year blows away those old Intercontinental title matches. I mean, every single person who's gotten that title... Like, Sammy had an incredible match every week. Ilya wins the title, has an incredible match every week. Carmelo beats Ilya. And I remember, like, man, this guy's going to have a tough act to follow. But last week, he faced Johnny Gargano. And, like, the first 10 minutes of the match, I was like, yeah, this guy can't follow Ilya. Like, he's good, but... And then the second half of that match was incredible. And then this match ended up being incredible. Like, you could say whatever you want about WWE and SmackDown, but if you try to claim that like this U.S. title thing that they do on SmackDown every week isn't like the best thing in the entire company, I don't know what to tell you, because it is awesome.
Saxton interviews Cody Rhodes. He says, Drew wants to bring up my father. That's just cheap and lazy. Dusty doesn't make the comeback. I make the comeback. He vows to beat Drew tonight, and then he says, up next is the Royal Rumble, and then WrestleMania. And the way he said it, like it was implied he's going to enter and win the Rumble and then challenge CM Punk or something. Very strange. Just throw it out that way. And hey, now maybe he might. Now think about it. So next week, they are in London. They're doing a four qualifiers to enter a four-way. The winner of that will then get a title shot. Randy Orton versus The Miz. I don't like Miz's chances.
Bro, listen. Miz did a promo last week. He was going to air his grievances about the company and everything like that. And not once did he mention that he didn't win any singles matches in 2025. Zero. He didn't win one singles match in 2025. So when they announced that he is in a tournament for a world title shot, I was like, I got to confirm this. Hold on a second. So I went online and... Miz did win tag team matches in 2025 during that brief period that he was teaming with Carmelo. And I'm pretty sure Carmelo got all of the pins in those matches. Maybe he didn't. But the point is, as a singles wrestler, he got zero wins in 2025. And so I kept going and going and going.
Oh, no.
And going. The last singles match that Miz won in WWE took place on February 5, 2024. Not 2025. 2024. Miz has not had one singles victory in 23 months. And he is in a tournament for a shot at the world title. Holy fuck.
Now I really don't like his chances. So it's Randy Orton versus Miz, Matt Cardona versus Trick Williams in a battle of the new faces, Damian Priest versus Solo Sikoa, and Sami Zayn versus Ilya Dragunov, which should be awesome.
23 months, dude.
It's a long time. It seems like there should be a stronger candidate than that for this
year.
You
could give birth to over two babies since he is last.
Well, I couldn't.
You could literally have two children in the time since he has won a singles match.
Your main event, Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre in three stages of hell. Drew got kind of a mixed reaction, but it was pretty much straight booze for Cody, at least early. So the first stage is a straight wrestling match.
God, I thought this match was really good, but I hated the finish of the first fall, and I hated the finish of the last fall.
I thought this match... I'm sure I get this. Let's put the end here, because then it's a lot. I thought it went from pretty good to long and boring to very good to long and boring, and then it ended. That's all three falls there summed up for you.
Well, they had a lot of time, but it's like the first match was a straight wrestling match, and so you presume, well, Cody's probably going to win the straight wrestling match, and then Drew will do something and Falls Count Anywhere. As it turns out, this first fall went like 4 minutes.
Yes.
Drew yanks off the turnbuckle. The ref goes to fix it. Drew kicks him in the balls and then claymores him and pins him. Mm-hmm. That sucks.
Phenomenal timing by that train.
Now, mm-hmm. It was phenomenal timing. Now, later, to jump to the third fall, they do another spot where Drew did something heinous. Oh, yeah, he threw him into an exposed turnbuckle and then hit a claymore, and Cody kicked out of that. And I thought that spot was so stupid because, listen, it's one thing if you're like 35 minutes into a match and you're exhausted and some guy kicks you in the balls and claymores you and pins you, but like they're like 4 minutes in, he kicks him in the balls and claymores him and pins him, and then 30 minutes later, he throws him into an exposed buckle, claymores him, but this time Cody kicks out. It's like, why the fuck didn't you kick out in that first fall? Made Cody look weak. So I didn't like the first fall at all.
Yeah, it was very short and ominous to it. There was a part that went outside. Drew passed Cody a chair and dared him to use it. But Cody is not that dumb, and that is exactly what Wade Barrett said. So they've gone 4 minutes. Drew is up 1-0. Second stage is Falls Count Anywhere. And Drew powerbombs him through a table for two, but Cody cuts him off, and they do a whole lot of crowd brawling. And they brawl here, and they brawl
there. I thought it was pretty good. Although there was a moment where they're fighting backstage, and Cody attacks Drew with what appeared to be a banana. I thought, is that a fucking banana? Did he just hit him with a banana? And sure enough, the announcers confirmed he attacked him with a banana. Yeah.
Yes, Cody was choking him with a banana. That is not a metaphor.
Then why'd you say choking?
Because what he did, he stuffed it in his mouth.
Well, first he hit him with it. He, like, stabbed him with a banana. You ever been stabbed with a banana?
I have not.
Unless you have a banana allergy. Maybe there's something we don't know about Cody that Drew knows.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe he has a potassium deficiency of some kind.
Well, that should have helped.
Honestly, bananas are a very popular treat for, like, halftime of sporting events. You know, give you a good energy boost. Maybe Cody was helping Drew here. He thought Drew was lacking. He needed a boost. They have a long brawl in a tunnel where they just whip each other in a metal over and over again. And the crowd is singing and chanting Cody's name. And Cody finally hits a splash off a barricade through the table. Even that only gets two.
After that first fall finish, I was furious when he kicked out of that.
Yep. Should use a banana with it.
Splash through a banana?
Yeah.
Crossroads through the announce desk. That finishes him off. Cody ties things up 1-1. Your third stage is inside a steel cage.
I will say that crossroads through the table collapsed. That looked like it hurt Cody more than Drew. But he won.
He probably did.
Yeah, that looked like it sucked.
So we all get a breather as the cage is lowered.
The traditional old school cage match where nobody can interfere was how it was explained.
It's really now.
Yeah.
So as the cage is lowering, they run this graphic on the screen and it's got steel cage match in giant letters, which is fine. But there's like floating blobs going across the background. I'm like, are we in such a side of somebody's bloodstream? What the hell is this? So Drew, as the match begins, is moaning, practically whimpering. He's in a sad, sad state of affairs. He immediately tries to escape, to climb out, but he is suplexed back in. He tries to go for the door, but Cody cuts him off. And then nobody went for the door again for about a half hour. So Drew gets the heat. Things slow down for a long, long time. There's chance of let's go Cody. Cody sucks. He keep going, I wrote so goddamn much about this match. So yes, the unprotected buckle is still there. The same buckle that Drew yanked the pad off 40 minutes ago that the ref distracted himself to fix and I guess never fixed. But yes, Cody went into it and they got clean board and kicked out. Cody hits a cutter, jumping backwards off the top of the cage. Like he nearly broke both of Drew's legs. But Drew kicked out. So Cody tries to climb again. I'm like, there's a door right over there, buddy. Much easier. They climb to the top of this cage. There's more zooming. They are up there for days and days and days. Where's Jim Ross to scream, get it over with? They both fall. They're both crushed on the top rope. Drew finally remembers, oh yeah, a door. And he goes to climb out. But as the referee opens the door, a hooded figure cuts him off and immediately unhoods himself to reveal Samuel Fatu, which is what Tessitore screamed. Drew is terrified. He immediately gets up, tries to flee out the cage to the other side, but Fatu kills him. So he's booed because the European crowd wants Drew to win. He's beating and beating and beating Drew. Cody feels so bad for Drew. He goes to pull Jacob Fatu off. Jacob turns and kills Cody for a while. And so Drew drags himself out the door to the floor and he wins. And the bell rings and his music plays and he's in the aisle gobsmacked. He's got his belt and he can't believe what's just happened. And meanwhile, Jacob is just staring at him like, dude, you can go beat him up more now. Why are you just standing in the ring? Just because the match is over doesn't mean you can't still beat his ass. Instead, he stands there like an idiot until Cody attacks him from behind and puts him into the cage.
Phew. I thought this finish was awful. And they promised in the advertising this would be an old school cage match where nobody can interfere. And of course, somebody interfered. I'm writing something down, by the way. So yeah, that kind of sucked. And the other thing was like, I thought Fatu was a babyface.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Until right now, yeah.
So I remember that somebody attacked Fatu and knocked all of his teeth out, and that's why Fatu disappeared. They claimed he had dental surgery. But he comes back, and then, yes, he goes after Drew. Because the story is that Drew's the guy that attacked him. Fine. That all makes sense, okay? I don't like interference, but that makes sense. So then he beats the guy down, and then he starts beating up Cody. I was like, why are you beating up Cody? And then as he's beating up Cody, the other guy crawls out and whizzes. And then Fatu's like angry. It's like, well, you stopped beating him up to beat up the other guy, so what are you angry about? So Fatu looks like a geek. We don't know if he's a babyface or a heel. It was like a cheap way to get the title off Cody without actually beating him. I didn't like the finish. I thought it sucked. The match itself, I thought, I thought the second fall and the third fall were very good. By the way, everyone's arguing with me on the chat about how long that first fall was. So I went back while you were doing the recap, and the match started at 2 hours, 29 minutes, 28 seconds. It ended at 2 hours, 33 minutes, 8 seconds. The match was 4 minutes, the first fall, 4 minutes. I know they claimed 6 on the air, but it was a 4-minute match, almost exactly. Actually, a little bit less.
By the way, didn't they claim that the whole last hour was going to be commercial-free?
They did say that. No, it wasn't.
You had a commercial?
There was a commercial break in the Nakamura match that was still in the third hour.
Oh, I think they meant after that.
So part of the third hour will be commercial-free.
My point was, about 10 minutes, that match went past the top of the hour.
Yes.
Right? Okay, yeah. So when the match ended, they said this third hour is going to be commercial-free, and there were no other commercials after that.
Well, they're going to say
so technically, there was a commercial?
Yes, there was a commercial in the third hour. That means the third hour was not commercial-free. They could have said the main event will be commercial-free. Right. That would have been true.
Well, it was also everything except what we just saw. Who cares? And my bigger issue is that four-minute first fall with a low blow and whatever he hit him with.
Yeah.
I didn't like
it. And by the way, if this were real, you know, what if Drew took two falls in a row?
It would be over.
Yes.
They would need a standby match.
like Collision had.
Like Collision had in the second
half. Frankly, it was awesome. So, hey, I'm in favor.
It was amazing when they're doing that standby match on Collision, and they said the first match went short.
Yeah.
I was like, it did.
It went like 15 minutes.
That match freaking went forever. What are you talking about?
It's just funny because Tony Khan always puts, if there's a stipulation like that, Tony puts it on first, or he puts it on early in the show.
Well, are we doing SmackDown then? We watched AEW Collision.
Let me start.
January 11th, 2026. January 10th, 2026.
Did you guys watch this opener?
Yeah.
Yes.
This was the most amazing fucking match I've ever seen.
This?
It is the Death Riders versus Skyflight. Okay? First off, Skyflight, they've got a new manager. Layla Gray tore her ACL. And so she has been replaced with Zeta Steele,
right,
who is a WWE ID talent. She's only like 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And when I heard they cut her, I was gobsmacked. But they did, and she is now here working for AEW. She's replaced Layla. And so they all come out, and Jon Moxley comes out, and he is going to do commentary on this match. And Jon Moxley, this guy is my, he's incredible. First off, he is so good at putting over his own crew, okay? Nobody trains as hard as we do. We are a well-oiled machine. Like, he puts them over like they're the best in the business. Nobody can compare to the Death Riders. But he never buries the other team. And it's one thing if the other team were like Will Ospreay and, you know, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. The other team is Skyflight, who have been in the same position for 6 years now. You know, they're bottom of the card guys. You know, they have good match and everything, but they never get pushed. But man, they do their comeback, and this guy is just like, how do they do this stuff? These guys are amazing. I'm like, this guy knows how to put everybody in this match over. So it's a basic match. You know, the baby faces run wild. They get cut off, and then Darius gets a hot tag, and he's running wild. They did two heats, but they were short because they wanted to get all the fun stuff in there and everything like that. And then we get what I can only describe as unintended, unscripted cinema. So Garcia is in the ring, and Pac and Wheeler are with him. And Dante Martin is also in the ring, okay? So it's three of the Death Riders and Dante Martin. Or no, Darius Martin, I think. Anyway, the point is this. Garcia grabs, I think it was Darius, in the corner, and he holds him, okay? This is what they were planning to do. Pac and Wheeler are clearly going to do a crisscross. And as they do the first crisscross, Wheeler is going to do a flip dive over the top, and he's going to wipe out Dante. And as he does the flip dive, Garcia is going to let go of Darius, and Pac is going to hit him with a lariat, okay? So they do this first crisscross, and Dante on the outside is like out to lunch. Mm-hmm. He's nowhere near where he's supposed to be. So they do the first crisscross, and he's not in position. They do a second crisscross. He's still not in position. They do a third crisscross. You can see Wheeler as he's running. He's looking. Where the fuck is this guy? They do like a fourth crisscross. As calmly as humanly possible, Jon Moxley says, just trying to blow ourselves up before the end of the match here. They do another fucking crisscross. They're just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And finally, Wheeler's like, fuck it. And he runs and he does a flip dive over the top onto no one. He lands on his feet and you can see him. He's got fury in his eyes. He goes to grab like, where the fuck were you? And they let go of Darius and Pac kills this guy with a lariat. And then they like go home. And, you know, Pac puts him in the brutalizer or whatever. I rewound this because it took me like 5 minutes to figure out What in the fuck is going on? What are they doing? And every time I watch it, it's funnier because Moxie's comment gets funnier every time. And I'm just like, what were they doing? And then finally I figure it out. He was waiting for Dante to do this spot, and like Dante just didn't fucking show up. So they finally hit their finish or whatever. And like, to their credit, like, these Death Riders are so professional. Like, you could see that Wheeler was pissed, but Pac just, he just kept running, and he just kept running, and he kept running, and he kept running, and he waited till that guy was released, and then he killed him, and he put him with the Brutalite, and he didn't miss a beat. He doesn't break character, nothing. And the only way you could tell that something's weird, besides, you know, when you saw the dive when he landed on his feet outside briefly, is the match is over, and they have kind of a long shot of everything. And look at Marina Shafir on the outside, far side of the ring. She's like this. She's fucking howling at this fucking spot. And like totally broken. And then she has to get in the ring to do like a back and forth with Zeta. And she's like, she can't stop smiling at how fucking ridiculous this was. Which worked fine because like she's not scared of this lady or whatever. But this was the funniest thing I've seen in wrestling in forever. And like, I could not believe how professional Pac and Moxley and like everybody was in this situation. Like, can you imagine if this were a Tim Flowers show and he was in the back? He would have just came out while they were still running with that cane, and he would have started 100%. Beating the shit out of Dante and yelling at him to get in the fucking right spot. I mean, oh my God.
It hit the other guys too.
I watched this. I had it scheduled to finish this show in an hour and a half. It took me 2 hours and 10 minutes because I kept watching this over and over and over again.
Well, I'm glad you figured out what happened because I thought they just had the weirdest finish ever planned.
No!
I'm watching them run back and forth. Now, you mentioned Tim Flowers, and I trained under Tim Flowers. I had a whole lot of crisscross drills. Here's the thing people may not realize about this crisscross thing. You're running. We're 15 into this match, and they're running hard and much longer than the anticipated running. And they're running, and they're running, and they're running. Like, they are trying to blow themselves up here. I thought they were showing off their cardio, which looked fine. Looked great, in fact. And then Pac wins, and it's Pac versus Darby on Wednesday. So, of course, that's why he won. That's all fine. Speaking of Darby.
It was ridiculous, but I cannot put over, like, everybody else in this match more for how professional they were in this situation. I would have been furious if this would happen. Just like, fuck, dude, where are you? Just like, get in the right spot for this spot. God.
So, speaking of Darby Allin, Moxley on this show, for the first time in a while, came off like a total heel, burying Darby for taking needless risks, being his own worst enemy. I mean, he's right.
Well, that's his gimmick, is he's always right.
But he's still kind of a dick about it.
Well, he's trying to protect this poor kid.
So they do this match, and there's a couple of face-offs between Marina Shafir and Zeta Steel. And God bless her, they had another face-off after the match. And first of all, there's a Zeta Steel here. There's a Jada Stone in TNA. I know I'm going to get those names wrong at some point. But Zeta here is like, she gets in Marina's face afterwards. And even Mox feels terrible about what's about to happen. Like, oh no. I thought Mox was going to hit the ring and save her. But it turns out Megan Bain is also there, and Megan plants Zeta with a running powerbomb, and Moxie notes, holy crap! And I laughed. And I was thinking here that I kind of can't believe this is what Marina's doing now, is feuding with Zeta Steel. I remembered she had that match.
Well, she's not really. It was a setup for Megan showing up to kill her.
So it's.
But I don't think Zeta's feuding with anybody.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted to kill somebody.
So I looked up what Marina had been doing lately, and I remembered she had a match against Tony on Dynamite, and they did that horrible DQ.
So yeah, that was a terrible spot. Her finish.
Lexi interviews a conglomeration. Have we mentioned how much Roddy's gimmick sucks?
Yeah, but you know what? At least on this show, he explained why he's still hanging out with him.
Because of somebody else he hates more?
He made it clear that he's not in the conglomeration, but he is not done with the Death Riders yet.
I see.
And since the conglomeration is constantly feeding with the Death Riders, that explains why he's there. Great.
So Mark is hyping up his match with Hechicero. And I can't do... This was the funny part I noticed. It was not nearly as subtle as Wheeler Yuta looking for Dante in the opener. But Mark's trying to explain how the conglomeration works. And he's making up as he goes along. he's playing it like he's a little bit lost, like he's unsure he's saying the right thing. But he's like, when two or more conglomerates are in the same place, you have a full conglomeration. And there's a pause for like 3 seconds. And he looks in the camera, he's full Mark Briscoe, says, yes! And I cackled. Brody King versus Barrett Brown in a standby match.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. Like, how long did they think this match was going to go? 40 minutes? This was very short. Barrett Brown tried to attack. He died. And Brody hit a cannonball, and the Gonzo Obama won. Nigel says we should do a second standby match, and I had so much fun with this one. I was like, that's a great idea. Give me more of this. And Bandido comes out to celebrate with Brody and plug the MJF match on Wednesday. The Don Callis family does a promo backstage. It's all Josh Alexander talking as various innocents are slaughtered in the background. Don Callis is still in Tokyo celebrating with Okada. So Josh plugs the El Clone and Hechicero matches for tonight. Also plugs Demand versus Jet Speed in the main event. And it occurred to me here that now that they're all in the same faction, along with like 20 other people, I do need one Mark Davis, Jake Doyle, Lance Archer trios match at some point. Because that's three big, mean shit kickers. That'd be awesome. El Clone versus Commander. He put a countdown in the corner. 21 minutes, whatever it was, to Mark Briscoe versus Hechicero. God bless him for trying, but it amused me. Like it's the new year or something. So this match was so much contrived stuff. And Claw needs a super kick and walks over to put himself in the corner. Commander charges. The Clone drops to a knee. So Commander does like a flip onto the ropes, then a flip back to the mat, and then like three more flips. Anyone who used to watch Chris Hero back in the early days of Ring of Honor, early for him in Ring of Honor, he would do this kind of thing as a heel for heat. Mm-hmm. Commander was doing it here to show off. And everything he does is some big, giant, wacky spot or a flip or a dive. And I was begging, like, just can somebody in this match just throw a punch or a chop? Just once, just to amuse me. There's a rope walk shooting star press where a guy lands on his feet and a countered something or other into a destroyer for two. And a convoluted leg hook and some kind of Made of Japan looking thing. And the crowd liked this a lot more than I did. They're chanting, it's awesome. And eventually, Clone hits a Port Obama wins. They sure did do a lot of stuff.
I like this match a lot. And it's funny because what I got out of this was El Clone is way better than Hologram, even though he's supposed to be a clone.
Is his name Eris?
I thought he was a far better worker.
One is Ares, one is Amiris. Amiris, right?
Okay. And my other takeaway, the crowd loved this match, by the way.
That is true.
They loved this match. I think the other takeaway was Clone keeps setting up for this move, which he finally hits, which is like this wacky bent leg Aramis. Capture into a Made in Japan.
Yeah.
It's the fucking coolest looking move I've ever seen. But then the dude kicks out and he hits a portal bomb. And I get it. The clone has to use Hologram's finish. That's mm-hmm. all fine and good, but goddamn, this other fucking movie did was like 50 times cooler. Looked like you killed somebody with the other one. This one is just like he spun him and dropped him. So I like his other move better than the portal bomb, but you can't win them all. I would advocate for a best of seven or a best of 1,000 between these two guys, but the gimmick, I think, and I'm sure it's possible this could be fucked up, but I think El Clone needs to go 34-0.
Oh, yeah.
He's a clone.
Yes.
Sure.
You have to go 34-0 till the guy comes back, and then you can do the battle. Or you do my other idea, which is he goes 34-0, but then it turns out that he's actually Hologram. He's not a clone.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. What I got from this review is Vinny, not a fan, Brian, a fan.
Yes.
On the couch, I was with Vinny, and my wife was with you.
Oh, so, interesting. A polarizing match here.
I mean, it's cool to see him flip and everything, but it's wrestling.
It's wrestling.
No, it's not. It's Lucha Libre, and I loved it.
Stop.
It's also like when everything you do is a big move, nothing you do is a big move.
Honestly, exactly. Honestly, and everyone's going to get mad at me, but if you don't like it, do your own show. I actually, in some ways, enjoyed this better than that Briscoe match with Hechicero.
Oh, my.
Because that match was great, but it was also one of those matches where, like, it didn't matter what Briscoe did. He just got countered and cut off. And it just went on until the end of the match. And it actually got to the point where when Briscoe hit that J-driller, I thought for sure Hechicero was going to kick out. Because, like, he just kicked out, and I don't want to say no-sold, but it was like Mark Briscoe was completely inept in this match until he finally hit his finish. It was more a showcase for Hechicero than it was for the actual champion.
That is true.
So I didn't like that aspect of the match. I mean, if you're the champion, you're gonna win. I mean, unless Hechicero is next for the belt, or he's gonna be getting a title shot or a title whatever. I mean, to just be a guy that's gonna go back to where he was, but he completely outshone the champion. I mean, they've done this many times. I don't like that kind of booking. If you're the champion, you should decisively beat the guy, and there should be no question when the match is over who the better guy is. And when that match was over, I was like, Hechicero's a better guy. Yeah. He just got caught.
We got a New Japan Wrestle Kingdom recap. They did a better job recapping New Japan show than most of the recaps they do of their own shows.
That is true.
I was like impressed and also irritated. Why can't you do this all the time? So they only showed really two matches, Takeshita and Tsuji and Okada and Tanahashi. And really, they didn't even show the finish of either one. So I guess they still wanted to buy the replay, which I guess is the point of this thing. And then they cut Tanahashi's 80-minute retirement ceremony down to like 4 seconds. But hey, they tried. Mina Shirakawa versus Lady Frost. There's some production goof there who says, somebody sent flowers for you, Mina. I don't know who it was. I guess you can just send flowers to somebody as they're entering a wrestling match to compete. You think it's better, more convenient places to have flowers delivered. So they have a very short match. Frost comes back with a flip or two. Mina has a series of discus and or rolling moves. Gets the figure four, and Frost battles and battles, but she taps out. Whole thing was just an excuse to have Mina get her flowers, and that was that.
Which she did get back at the end of the match.
She did get them back, yes. Mercedes Moné video. Cut backstage after Dynamite is still covered in cake. She's screaming into a mirror. Says she held that title for 500 days. She will always be the greatest. She's sick of the disrespect around here. To show you bitches a lesson, I am taking a break from AEW. Good luck without me. I'm collecting more than just titles when I come back.
There's so is she going to drop all these other indie belts?
That's a good question, because she's still got like 8 of them, doesn't she?
Makes sense.
I think 9.
Whatever it
is. This Mina Shirakawa. Find someone with more charisma.
Difficult.
I'll wait. Find someone with a better entrance. I'll wait. Find better workers, but she's good.
Yeah.
But goddamn, she is just a fountain of charisma.
Well, she's awful cute.
She's a fountain of charisma.
She's awful cute.
Hechicero, who we don't know if he was cute or not because he wears a mask, versus Mark Briscoe.
Guessing no.
Crack.
Call it a hunch.
That's terrible.
They had a great match. I don't care what Brian says.
It was great. It was just every now and then they have a great match that I think would be significantly better if they didn't make the champion look so inept at the end.
See, my nitpick, and I will admit this is a nitpick, I thought they did one or two more momentum shifts to counters at the end than they needed to do.
Well, yeah, because everything that Briscoe did got countered every much, last yeah, single yeah. time.
That's something that happened. There was an epic battle for him to get the ropes as he was in like a... Because Hechicero was working the arm. He's doing a variety of arm bars. At one point, grabs the leg as well. So Mark has to battle like crazy just to get to the ropes. 10 minutes to go, we are told. This is like the one time they did time calls and it never came into the finish at all. Mark eventually gets the chair-assisted dive, the dive off the chair. Tries the J-driller, but his arm gives out. Hechicero gets that head scissors driver for two. So Hechicero goes for what appears to be a J-driller, and the crowd's like gasping with anticipation. But then he turns into a face plant and kind of sort of an armbar.
What happened?
You're not the only person who asked that, because the crowd was lost at that point. They didn't know if it was a mistake. I think he just did a face plant and then put like an angel's wings and put on an armbar. But the crowd was confused there. There's a top rope battle, and Mark bites his way free. And they do like 4 more things, and Mark finally gets the J-driller and wins.
See, the thing to me is if you watch like an Okada match, for example, he is an incredible worker. And what he'll do is he will do a mix-up spot here or there, you know, 15, 20 minutes into the match, and you'll be caught like completely off guard. Something will come out of nowhere. And the reason for that is because so much of the match isn't like that. And so if you start the match and from the moment the match starts, everything is a counter of everything else. It's like everything's just a counter, 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 counter. I feel like to make counters matter, you got to not have counters for a period of the match.
That is also true.
So when you do them at the end, everyone's like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. Or holy shit, I can't believe. when you start with counters, there is no holy shit moment. Everything is a counter. And then you get to what we're doing lately, which is you have all of these counters, and now people are numb to the counter, so how can we surprise them if people are numb to counters? Well, we'll remove the counter, and we'll hit somebody with a big move, but that person just won't sell the move at all, and then they'll hit a move. That's your mix-up now. So I think that's what I felt in this match. It was like, from the moment the match started, it was just counter, 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 counter. And by the end, I was like numb to it. And I was like, why can't Jay get anything on this guy? Like, what am I watching here? Like, everything they did was great, including they did this tilt-a-whirl into the head scissor DDT. And I've seen Hechicero do this many times. It has never looked as good as this one. And with all opponents, by the way, not even a luchador, he hit this tilt-a-whirl into a DDT, and it was just fucking like a head scissor. It was a tilt-a-whirl into a like a leg scissor DDT. It was fucking incredible. And the way that Briscoe sold it and the fans went wild, I was like, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. So it's not like I hated the match. I thought they both wrestled like great. I just didn't like portions of it. I didn't like how they put it together in a way.
I enjoyed this match a lot. It reminded me of, the early days of Nitro, where you'd have two completely different styles on each side of the ring, and somehow it all comes together because it's all wrestling at its base core. And I thought this was really good.
That whole time I was doing that review, I was like, man, we're just about to wrap this up and call it a night. And I realized that was not the main event. Mm-mm. What was the main event? It was the feature attraction, but it was the top of the hour. So we got a lot of way to go. Lexi interviews Eddie Kingston, Ortiz, and the Grizzled Young Veterans. They're having a tag match next week. Maximum Carnage Collision is what it's being called. So the veterans are talking about how they've had to do what they are told and how to behave for 20 years, whereas Eddie Kingston can dress and talk however he wants. They're going to put an end to that and drag Ortiz down too. So Eddie Kingston says, and I wrote this down to make sure I had it right, "You reap what you sow. We don't sow. We reap."
Right.
"Let that marinate." I have no idea what that means.
Well, that means they get all the spoils and they don't do any of the work.
Well, that's a horrible thing for a babyface to say.
That's a horrible thing to teach your kids, too.
Yeah. A Kenny Omega video package. He's coming back in Dynamite. Then we had a video package all about the history between FTR and Adam Copeland. Well, that's odd timing, considering he hasn't been seen in months and months and months. And then they kind of turned it around the second half of the package. It's about how the tag team champions now and the SI tag team of the year. But felt to me like he'll be back on Dynamite, and they spoiled their own surprise.
Kind of, yeah.
Vert Vixen and Hyun and Maya World.
No. Vert Vixen.
They didn't have one word. Yeah, I'm going to assume that is a typo.
She is Vert Vixen. All one word.
It's not even easy to say.
No, it's not.
Anyway, three of them versus the Babes of Wrath and Chris Statlander. I could not fathom how long this went. And I'm not saying that to disrespect any of the women involved. I'm fans of all of them. But, dude!
Well, thank God they had that standby match.
This went, they wrestled, and they wrestled, and they wrestled, and they go to commercial break, and they come back and they're wrestling, and they got the Heat and Harley. I'm like, listen, not everything needs to be a banger. This match did not need to be a banger.
No, it didn't.
Chris comes in without a tag, then just leaves. So the Heat's still going on. I don't know. Maybe she got bored. I'm not sure. Willow finally gets a real hot tag, and she and Statlander run wild, and Stat and Vert do one last high spot, and Stat finally wins with a cradle tombstone. If there was any doubt about what's happening there, then I thought a little about this. And this whole thing with Hyun and Maya World, they got this opportunity here because Dakota Kai and her friend decided they didn't want 1 minute
of TV time. Not Dakota Kai.
I forget who
Nixon
it was.
Nixon Newell.
Yes. Oh, Tegan Knox. Yes. Apologizes. Yeah. I apologize. Nixon Newell and her friend, whose name I don't remember at all, they decided they didn't want 1 minute of TV time, and so Hyun and Maya got it instead. And so if they gave them like 20 minutes here just as a way to be petty to Nixon Newell and the other one, I can respect that level of pettiness. That's well done. I'm fine with that. There is more.
I thought this match was fun for what it was.
There was nothing wrong with it, except I can't believe how long it was given where the... It's like you say, that a champion should win decisively. This is three champions, the tag team champions and the TBS champion and the women's champion, who were just a little bit better than Hyun and Maya World and Vert Vixen.
And Vern Vixen.
Yes.
Well, she was the former Defy Women's Champion.
So they're about to clink belts in solidarity when there's more. Tekla interrupts from far away. She plugs, says her piece, "We'll beat you up on Wednesday."
Thank God she did the whole promo.
The other two weren't even there. Show you what it means to be toxic. I thought, okay, be done. No, Statlander is rebutting. There's more to say. You will call me Big Stat Daddy. God, there's a lot of TV time dedicated to that match. Compared to the TV time dedicated to plugging Babes of Wrath and Statlander versus the Triangle of Madness, compared to the TV time dedicated to plugging Bandito versus MJF. It's like 20-1. We go to Don Callis, allegedly live in Tokyo, where he is celebrating Okada's win over Tanahashi. Fletcher interrupts. Apparently, he flew himself to Tokyo to complain. He walks in.
That's a great point.
Which is actually something Kyle Fletcher might do. So, hey. He walks in, and Don Callis calls him a champion. I thought, okay. Or he calls him, "How you doing, champ?" I'm like, does he actually have a championship right now? I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm not certain. He says somebody needs to say something to Okada. Not only at World's End did he stab his own stablemate Takeshita in the head with my screwdriver that I planted, he screwed me too because I wasn't there when I needed it. Don says, as far as I'm concerned, the only one who got screwed at World's End is Okada. He walked in the Continental Champion. He walked out without it. I didn't even want you in the tournament in the first place, he says. I wanted you to focus on the TNT title. Speaking of which, it's now 3-3 between you and Mark Briscoe. Match 7 is obviously coming. We need to get you prepared to win that title back. That is a great use of your energy. There is a brief Bandito MJF promo where Bandito vows to end Max's reign and be world champion.
Fletcher did not look happy, by the way.
No. Maybe relented. The main event, I suppose, is Demand versus Jet Speed and Anthony Bowens.
That is the main event. It was the last match on the show. Yes.
This annoyed me. They worked their asses off.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why. Because it's like you say, when everything is a counter, it all starts to run together. When everything is a double team or a dive or a big move, it all runs together. I was like, if they had worked half this hard and just had a house show tag team match, it might have been better. And then we get to the finish. So there have been 6 guys in this ring for, I swear to God, 5 straight minutes. There's his bodies everywhere. And Bowens hits his move on Ricochet, the mollywop, and he makes a cover. And the referee says, "I can't count. You are not the legal man." Are you fucking kidding me?
It was a blind tag.
How did he keep count?
How did anyone know who was legal? And if none of us could know who was legal, why should we care who was legal?
Correct.
Well, this ref cared.
He did.
He enforced the rules of professional wrestling.
So Gates of Agony immediately pinned Bowens with a slam. And way to go, Anthony Bowens.
Well, the story is he cannot win unless he's with Caster, who he hates.
Yeah.
An award-winning storyline here.
Speaking of, they keep beating up Bowens, so Caster comes out. First, I thought he was scolding them. Like, he wouldn't actually make the save, but he was saying, "Hey, knock that stuff off." Then I think he was encouraging them.
I think he was telling them to hit him harder.
Go beat him up more.
But it was a distraction so Jet Speed could make the save.
Yes, then Caster joins in.
And then he joined in.
Yes. The same guys who was telling them to beat up his old partner more. So everyone in the world runs out. The Don Callis family, maybe all of them as far as I can tell, they're out there. The conglomeration is out there. And eventually the 7 or 8 baby faces in the ring clean house and the thing just ends.
Okay, well, thank you for at least telling me that because, as usual, a YouTube TV cut off the overrun.
Dude, I wish my overrun would cut off.
Well, here's the thing. So as I mentioned, Max, they had provided me free Max so that I could review AEW. But it ended at the end of the year. I found out about that on January 1st when I tried to watch on Max. So I've not resubscribed yet because there hasn't been a pay-per-view or anything. So my only, I'm like everybody else. I can only watch on my TV provider. So it got cut off and I waited 24 hours because sometimes they'll put the end up after a day or whatever. And it still got cut off. And there was no full show. So I thought, well, my final option here, unless I want to resubscribe to Max today, is I'll see if it's available on YouTube because sometimes they'll put the overrun on YouTube. No, there was no overrun on YouTube. So it was impossible to me, without a subscription to Max, to find out what happened at the end of this show. And after rebooting YouTube TV, waiting 24 hours, and checking YouTube, I just decided it must not have been that important. So
correct.
I don't know what the fuck happened.
You missed 2 minutes and you missed nothing.
Yeah. I can confirm. Everyone brawled and they played somebody's music. And I was like, what in the hell was the point of that? Are you going to do another Blood and Guts now?
Well, since Blood and Guts happened, they've done many angles setting up Blood and Guts.
They have.
But it's over. So I don't know what's going on. You know, I want to mention quickly, because I know I'm going to hear it on the board tomorrow. Guys, for the 50th time, the issue is not me watching the end of the show. I'm trying to help the other 6 million subscribers to YouTube TV, the largest streaming television service in this country. 6 million subscribers. None of them can see the end of these AEW shows. I know I could get a VPN, or I could get Max, or I could do whatever. I am trying to unselfishly help other human beings watch the end of these AEW programs. AEW does not seem to give a shit, so I am trying to help. I have been unsuccessful for the past year. I see that I will continue to be unsuccessful. But I have done everything, including send emails to the engineers of YouTube TV explaining the issue after they asked me, after I emailed them, like, what's going on. I tried to explain this to them. I still have not seen any improvement. So I will just continue to not watch the overrun until hopefully somebody does something so that the other 6 million people with YouTube TV can maybe watch the overruns of AEW programming. Hey, those were the shows, everybody.
Those were the shows. We are done now.
Yeah, we are done now. Yeah. Monday, I'll be back with Filthy Tom, Observer Live, and Dave, Observer Radio. Tuesday will be another Observer Live and the Brian and Vinny and Granny and Craig and Sean show. Tuesday, we will be reviewing the TNA Impact show from 20 years ago this week. That would be, I believe, January 13th or 14th, 2006. And we will also discuss the future of TNA Impact reviews. Because people are
bored.
They're bored.
Let's just call it. They're bored.
They're bored and the shows suck.
Yeah. State of the Union, if you will.
A state of the TNA Union. So that'll be Tuesday on the show. And as noted, it's a free show here. If you like what you hear, you can sign up right now. A lot of options. WrestlingObserver.com. Get all of the shows, all of the archives, 17,000 podcasts, thousands of observers dating back to 1991. The board and so much more. Or we have three $9.99 options. YouTube, which is F4W. Actually, it's what is it? Video.f4wonline.com.
Cool.
Video.f4wonline.com. Or just search for us on YouTube. That's easier. That's $9.99 for videos. Or Spotify has audio and video. $9.99. F4wonline.com/Spotify. And you can also go to Apple Podcasts, f4wonline.com/Apple. And I wish we could get f4wonline.com/YouTube. That would certainly be easier, because then everything would be the same. But, oh, it does work!
Woo!
f4wonline.com/YouTube.
A miracle!
Yeah, easy. So sign up, everybody. It's Royal Rumble season, WrestleMania season, lots of great stuff coming up. And you won't regret it. And that's it. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.
Bye.